This episode of TWIM is brought to you by the new voice-activated Sync featuring hands-free calling, music, and podcast search, and turn-by-turn navigation. Available exclusively on Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles. For more details, visit SyncMyRidePodcast.com.
This week on the show, mobile is the future of all types of content, says Gary Vaynerchuk. And a blog post is like taking a shower in the morning. It's just how you get started. All this on This Week in Media, episode 162. Hey there, boys and girls. We are back with another edition of This Week in Media. Thank you so much for joining us. I am your host, Daisy Whitney, of the New Media Minute fame and various other things. And Alex is out today. So Alex in Pittsburgh, hello, hello. We'll see you next week, probably. For those of you who are watching live on Twitch, hello. I am going to try to check into the chat room a couple times. I don't usually do that, but I want to do that because I know it's important to the listeners and the viewers. I can tend to be a little bit distracted, which is why I haven't done it in the past. So I'm going to give it a shot today. I just want you to know that I'll check in from time to time and see if you have questions or things that you want me to ask our guests, because we have a great lineup today. We have one very special guest. Before I introduce our guest, my co-host is Tim Street from Los Angeles. You look sharp today in your suit. Thank you for being on.
Hey, thanks for having me always, Daisy. It's always fun. Glad to be here.
Well, it's good to have you. And then we have our very special guest, which is why we don't have anyone else on the show, and frankly, why we don't need Alex today, because we have Gary Vaynerchuk. Hello, Gary.
I'm thrilled to be here.
It is a pleasure to have you. Gary is on a book tour right now. He just landed in Atlanta, so he is Skyping in from his hotel room in Atlanta. He's going to be in Montgomery, Alabama, New Orleans, Denver, and did you say St. Louis? And that is just this week, and that is in support of Crush It, which is a New York Times bestseller. Yay! All very excited.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's, I'm going to get to our news in just a minute. Let me tell you how today's going to work. Because when we have a special guest on like Gary, all of our guests are special, but when we have somebody like Gary who is really such an expert, I know our listeners are going to want kind of specific questions and input from him. I want to make sure we have enough time to do that. So we're going to do a little bit of news because it is This Week in Media. Then we're going to spend a little bit of time in the middle just kind of talking to Gary and just kind of getting his branding tips and thoughts for new media folks and producers and all the wonderful people who listen to our show. Before we get there, I need to thank our sponsors because I want to let you know that this episode of This Week in Media is brought to you by the new voice-activated Sync from Ford. Now, Sync listens to your voice, so Sync knows what to do when you tell it to play TWIM, which you should be doing, or to call home, which is a nice thing to do as well, or play your favorite music playlist or whatever it is, or even it can also give you turn-by-turn navigation when you're driving. You can also get weather and traffic updates. It's all hands-free with the sound of your voice. And if you want more details, go to SyncMyRidePodcast.com. And of course, that's from Ford. So thank you for sponsoring our show. My chair is sinking to the floor right now. I was doing that out of my chair, just like sank down. I think I gained maybe 20 pounds this weekend, and that's why the chair just went down. Okay, so Google has been in the news recently. There are these new Google real-time search results, which is kind of interesting. So it's integrating tweets, it's integrating Yahoo Answers, news articles. Obviously, we've been seeing, you know, Google News integrated into search results for a while, and web pages, of course. But you also can see, like, if you were to, you know, look up somebody's name now and they're active on Twitter, you'll see their most recent tweet. It's pulling in info from Facebook as well, which has caused a lot of consternation amongst people who don't want to see all their Facebook info there. So people are changing their privacy settings. Gary, what's your take on these real-time search results? Good or bad?
Good and bad. Like everything else, Daisy, you know? I mean, it's you know, it's a personal thing. I don't think people understand. You know, we're in control here. You know, you're in control. There's nothing out there that is forcing you to do anything. And so if you don't want what you're saying to not show up, then you're very capable of pulling that off. And if you are, because it's a branding thing or a business thing, then you can get it to be put out there. It's amazing to me. It's not amazing. I understand. People are just not educated, right? A lot of people are always half glass empty, you know, and they're quick to say Big Brother's taking over. So the second they hear any headline, they're like, see, I told you, you know, the government's going to kill us. I mean, so you have all those people out there that react very quickly and quick to jump on thinking that it's a negative. But the fact of the matter is that real-time search has a lot of value. I think there's going to be enormous commerce around it. And I think there's going to be a lot of winners in that game, probably two or three winners financially. And more importantly, there's a lot of value for users. I mean, if I'm sitting in traffic, if I'm going to an event, you know, if I want to know something about the new menu, I mean, real-time search has big value. People are going to use it. People are using it. It's why I liked Twitter back in 07 when Surmise.com came out. That's how I used it. And I think once people get educated, they'll I mean, there's people – this is what's so funny to me, Daisy. There's people that actually didn't want to have cell phones back in the day because they really swore the government had them all tapped.
Well, they do. So, the government does, Gary. They were right.
Yeah, and they were right. And so, you know, we might as well all succumb to Big Brother has
exactly.
always been there. I mean, if you use the internet, Big Brother's there. Big Brother's probably in this hotel room right now. Let me just wave. I mean, you know, so –
What are the e-commerce opportunities? That's an interesting point. Like, what do you see as potential business opportunities with real-time search results?
The Lakers win the NBA championship, right? It's game seven. The Lakers win the NBA championship over the Celtics, and I sell Lakers memorabilia. For me to buy ad space in real-time search places, including and excluding Google, is very attractive to me. It's always what I thought Twitter would do, and I always thought that was where they were going to make real money, because every moment in time, for example, there's a wine segment on 60 Minutes, right? In a couple weeks, big one coming up about growth in wine. I could buy the term 60 Minutes wine, you know, for 4 or 5 hours when it's airing and probably really convert. I don't think people you know, Daze, you know how I think differently in a head. I'm really into like step 2, 3, 4, 5. I'm very good at putting myself in a position to react to a new reality. And so when I think about that, I'm like, huh, you know, people are searching these things that are happening right this minute. And if I'm in commerce or conversion, they're good buys, but you don't buy them like Google AdWords. You don't buy them for a month or a year. You buy them for 6 hours. So there's going to be people who are going to make lots of money buying words as the pulse of society is shifting, could become a fascinating type of job description.
It's kind of like it's kind of like day trading, like stock trading in a way, if you think about it, with real-time search results. It gives it that kind of immediacy and fever.
Sure, and there's
I'm
also an opportunity.
That from my analogy.
Tim?
There's also an opportunity to help people out. I mean, if you think about a hurricane situation where, you know, information needs to get out there. Where can people go to find shelters? Where can they find tarps to cover their house with, you know, after the storm, after the roof's blown off? There's a huge value in terms of socially helping people. And that also kind of ties into the Google Living story.
Yes, the Google Living story. Thank you for that segue. Okay, so
that was
Google,
a professional segue, if I may say so, Tim. That was a very professional segue.
I know, that was really nice. Like, you could just intro the Google Living story if you'd like. So Google announced last week Living Stories. This is an experimental news feature designed to deliver news stories, updates, editorials, and multimedia focusing on specific topics all on one single web page. And the idea, as I understand it, behind the Living Story is because Google is Big Brother, and we're all okay with that here on Twim, is that it knows what you've read already. So that if you've seen a photo, for instance, as news stories and updates are posted, you would read them on the same page, but it keeps track of your activity. So it alerts you to updates that you haven't yet seen. And if you've seen other ones, it kind of collapses them out, essentially. So it's always keeping it fresh for you. You know, there's so much news and buzz and chatter surrounding Google right now, and not just for real-time search results, but specifically for Google's interaction with news organizations. And I want to look at this in a couple contexts, one in and of itself, but is this some kind of olive branch to news owners so that Google is using its services to kind of play nicer with them? Or is it yet another way of potentially being scary to Rupert Murdoch? Gary, you want to start?
Yeah, I'll start. Google doesn't give a crap about Rupert Murdoch or anybody else. They are a fearless empire, entrepreneur, capitalism machine that is going to run over and steam over anybody they can if they're capable, because that's how they're built and that's their culture. And, you know, they don't want to do it in a bad way. They just want to win. Just like any big company or small company, they want to win. And their olive branches are only strategy to make sure that nobody gets in the way of what they want to accomplish, like any other business. You know, they were brilliant in branding themselves and don't do evil and all that. And that bought them time because people are like, oh, yeah, because people believe what they're told. Oh, yeah. Google, what are you talking about? Google doesn't do anything evil. They said so. Not that I think listen, you're talking to the most capitalistic kind of character. I think as long as you're not trying to hurt people, everything is fair game when it comes to business, as long as you're not breaking the rules and trying to hurt anybody. And Google is going to continue to do what they want to do, and their fear level of people like Murdoch or CNN is laughable. They don't look at those people as any kind of threat. They laugh like this, like, like that. They like completely dismiss them, in my opinion.
What do you think about from a user point of view with something like this? You know, when you're going to the web and you're looking up stories, does this entice you as a newsreader? Do you think that's helpful for consumers themselves?
I think that, you know, it really comes down to the person. You know, it's amazing to me as things grow for me, and I think as things people's you know, circle grows for them, you're starting to realize, wow, news is finding us. We're not searching. We're getting news is finding us. And so I think that's going to be a fascinating thing that I'm paying attention to, that I think is more of an interesting future, which is, I don't know how much news searching we're going to do. I think things are going to come to us. I think this word of mouth thing that I continue to talk about is massively underrated. And I think people are underestimating how much the activation of word of mouth in our society, the true connection of people at a level we've never seen before, speed-wise through mobile and all these apps and the web, is going to change the culture of how we do things. I'm not so sure that we're going to seek as much as be sought out.
Who's underestimating word of mouth, Gary?
99% of the people in the world. And I'll tell you why. Because 85% of the people don't even know what the heck we're doing right now. I think we live in a bubble that, you know, whether it's LA, New York, San Fran, people do not recognize how many people don't even know what, you know, Ustream is or what Tumblr is. You know, listen, we were
all
using
Hulu. I mean, from a bigger point of view, or Hulu.
Hulu, I think, has become a little mainstream only because it's television and they've had commercials on television. But, I mean, you know, by the way, news alert, Twitter didn't become something most people knew about or half the people knew about until the summer of this year. Spring between, you know, Ashton and Iran and
Oprah.
You know,
definitely Oprah.
That's right. Oprah. That's right. Very good point. Thank you, Tim. I mean, those three things. I mean, I've been using it since December 06 and feverishly all of 07 and 08 and into 09. We underestimate in our bubble here how much ahead we are. And then within the bubble, because I live it hardcore and talk to a lot of people in the bubble all day long. People are underestimating what word of mouth does for business. Businesses are built on word of mouth, not marketing. And our word of mouth is starting to scale more and more and more. More people are jumping into this. I think what mobile brings to the table is going to be very fascinating. Real-time and mobile combination, I think, changes things dramatically. I see a day and age where I'm going to a restaurant, and at the last minute, I go somewhere else because I can be talked to and talked out of it and connected to while in the subway or in a taxi. You know, I mean, those are very interesting financial and economical impacts. And it's going to come down to being good and customer service and other things of that nature. So, Dave, to answer your question, 99% of the people, in my opinion, are underestimating because it's not being talked about and it's definitely not being executed about enough, in my opinion, considering the magnitude.
You know, what's interesting is that most marketing studies will say that it is the most influential form. I know eMarketer has put out some good reports recently talking about how, you know, word of mouth, especially from friends and family in real life, is the number one influencer on purchase decisions. And then second, social media, which are, you know, influencer word of mouth from people that we might not know in real life, but that who we interact with online is becoming second. So I think, yes, to your point, I absolutely agree with you that it is influential. Tim, I want to let you weigh in because it sounds like you're trying to say something.
Well, what interests me and what concerns me is when there is going to be a social media lynching. I mean, right now, you know, there will be. And we're on the early end of this. And so there are a lot of people out there that are disgruntled that aren't doing anything right now in this space. Once they connect in the social media space and they meet other people that have similar interests and are also disgruntled about similar things, there could easily be a social media lynching to where a business goes down or somebody's career is lost just because word of mouth on social media takes them down.
Hey, Tim?
Yeah.
In 4 years, if what happened to Tiger Woods this last, couple weeks happened in 4 years, his impact on his personal brand business would have been much greater because more people would have talked about it. There would have been more smoke, not less, and more voices, different voices, voices that haven't been heard, like tons of housewives and kids and different things out there that are going to impact that story. I mean, but here's the funny part. The lynch mobbing is going to happen to people that do wrong. See, this is where a connected word of mouth game creates a scenario where good wins bigger and bad loses more. The extremes of victory and defeat are going to stretch. The people that cheat on their wives or husbands, the people that cheat on their taxes or what have you, is going to stretch higher because there's going to be more people talking about it. The media is not going to move on to it. The people decide when you move on to it or not, and they may decide to never move on.
Actually, I have to say, I think this is a fantastic point. Colleen just weighed in, and she said, social norms are going to fit the technology. Did I get that right? Which is interesting because we now live such public lives. We have to watch every move. And I'm not saying technology makes us better people, but it is revealing who we are. And if you don't like what's being reflected back at you, then it's like you can change it. Of course, you're always able to change that. But now you're seeing it reflected back more clearly. And I wonder, Gary, if you can talk a little bit about best practices. I mean, you said broadly, yes, the people who are doing good will win. People who are doing bad will win out. Because basically what you're saying is that, in a way, with social media and with all of these new tools, the truth will be revealed. The truth will come out. Like, you can't hide any longer. Knowing that, what specific pieces of advice would you give to media creators, to producers, and just to people in general, what sort of rules do you have for yourself in terms of what you'll talk about in social forums and what you won't talk about?
Well, I think, first of all, taking care of your users, listeners, employees, customers, the people you engage with in a business aspect, I think the separation of how you treat them and how you treat your favorite family members in the world needs to close. I think most people treated their favorite family member here, and they treated their customers, it's off the screen, down there. And I think what would be very healthy, and what I've always practiced, is it gets really close. And sometimes the family might not like that, but for running a successful business, you've got to go there. You want to make sure that the way you treat your customers and your business partners and your employees is so darn close to the way you would treat the best person in your world. I would say the closer you can close that gap, the more successful you will be. I would also recognize that we are living in a world where privacy is dwindling away. I don't think it's completely gone. I don't think there's death of privacy. I don't think that it's completely vanished. But I do think there's going to be a bigger value on privacy because it's going to become much more limited. You've got to understand, no more side jokes, no more different jokes for the guys in the locker room business-wise than what you would say to the ladies in the boardroom. There's just a lot going on with that. And I really, really, really am excited about the fact that I just think goodness is going to have a much, much better chance to prevail. I just do. The shadows of our society are being exposed by social media.
What can I say to that? That is brilliant. I don't even know what to add to that. So I'm going to have to move on to another story. I'm curious if Rupert Murdoch has a point at all. And I bring this up because one of our listeners, Bill Barnes, he's a student at the University of Toronto Faculty of Law, and he wrote an interesting blog post titled with that title, Maybe Rupert Murdoch Has a Point. And it kind of goes to what you were saying earlier, Gary, Google is a capitalist company, understandably. And he says, you know, don't get me wrong, I like Google and I mostly trust Google, but I can see how what they do might be called unfair. When they index websites, they make a copy. Somewhere hidden in an abandoned missile silo, I assume, they have a vast array of computers mirroring the web and so on. You know, what about, you know, that all of this data that Google collects obviously is a huge asset for Google. Is it, you know, rightfully so? Are there risks attached to that? And is it understandable for media companies to be concerned? Tim, let's throw that to you for a sec.
Well, I think it's one thing if you're Rupert Murdoch and you have all these other properties that you can use to drive traffic to your website. But from an independent content creator standpoint, I don't know that I want to hide my properties from Google. You know, they're pretty valuable in getting me traffic, especially when I'm creating content that's relevant to other people who are using Google to search for.
Well, Tim's just basically saying, like, listen, for us little schlemos and schlemiels out here, we need Google to send us traffic. You know, Rupert's in a different spot. He's got a lot of properties that can link to each other and send each other love. And it's a different kind of game. And I think he's right. But I think what's important about that is to respect Rupert's standpoint on this, right? I mean, this is business again. And so, you know, who all of a sudden decided that Google's okay with Google being the greatest, nicest platform in the world and they'll do everything right? I don't necessarily don't trust them, but you never want to trust one entity to do anything. And more importantly, I love the game of business and I think it's interesting chess. I mean, I think it's very fascinating if we start looking at things like this. Or what if Rupert gets four or five other major media players together, you know, Redstone and those kind of characters, those iconic characters, and they go to Bing and Microsoft and say, you know what, exclusively on your site. And, you know, why can't we do business? Like, why, you know, why does Google have all autonomy to search our sites? They don't, if you want to block them. And maybe there's very good business reasons to not allow them. Definitely not for the ones of us that want to get traffic from them. But I've always been the kind of character that's never been massively in love with the kind of leads you get from a search engine anyway. I think it's like having a good location as a retailer. It's good, but great content is always going to win. And then you could say, well, how am I going to be discovered? Well, there's a new way, guys. There's massive amounts of conversations being done on the internet now, and you can go and enjoy them and get involved and extend your hand and say, hey, I'm Gary. I talk about wine. What are you guys talking about in here? Oh, really? Zinfandel? I disagree. You know, so it's out there. There's a very different alternative opportunity to just hoping for some search engine love.
So, Gary, a lot of the listeners who listen to our show are independent producers. And, you know, I'm sure many of them want to be like you. What advice would you give somebody wanting to be found, wanting to be discovered? You know, I mean, I know this is sort of the gist of what your book is all about. But, you know, somebody who's just starting a web show, whatever it is, whether it's scripted, whether it's a how-to show, maybe it's, you know, I was just watching a show this weekend, you know, it's called Rebecca Plants. And it's actually pretty well done. This gal, it's sort of like a celebration of the outdoors and just this mom and just, you know, kind of going outside with her kids. What should somebody like that do to crush it online?
Your content has to be good, first of all. You could be the greatest marketer of all time. You could be Vince McMahon plus P. Diddy plus, you know, Walt Disney combined in one person. And if your content sucks, you've lost. So first of all, you've got to make sure that your content, what you talk about, is something you understand and know. For all my hoopla and all my marketing skills and all the stuff I bring to the table, if I didn't know anything about wine, that show would have never worked. So it's always, always content. That being said, Daze, you know where I stand on this. You got to work your friggin' face off. People are not working hard enough. You know, they're just not. They're putting up a blog post every couple days, or even if they put it up every day, that's the cost of entry. Putting up a blog post is like showering in the morning. It's the beginning of the process. It's not enough. You've got to get out there. You've got to biz dev. You've got to go to conferences and meet people. You've got to go to forums. Remember those things? There's tons of people there. You've got to go on Twitter and Facebook and every blog that talks about the same things that you talk about. You've got to get your hands real, real dirty.
I love that because I think that's a great way of looking at it. It's like taking a shower in the morning. It starts with you have to produce you can't do it without the content. You know, it's like Elaine Bennis said on Seinfeld, people like interesting writing. It has to be good, first of all. But then the next step is you have to create those Google breadcrumbs or the Bing breadcrumbs or whatever it is. You have to leave this trail of internet love behind you for people to find you. And the only way to do that is by actually going out and doing the work. I'm sure people say this to you as well, but people ask me, how do you have a day job and find time to write a novel as well? You know, in your case, how do you do everything you do and write Crush It? Well, I don't have a magic pill. I put my butt in the chair and I did the work. And it's the same thing with, how did you build up the Wine Library brand? You got out there every day.
Yeah, you go to sleep at 3 a.m. and you don't go to like 45 Knick games or watch every episode of Lost. I mean, you work.
Gary, how it gets done.
Do you see that a lot of people are waiting for permission or waiting to be tapped on the head? I mean, I run into that a lot. Do you?
Yeah, I think there is. I mean, you know, we're all built differently. You know, we all have different DNA. We all have different parents. And we all grew up in different places. And those things have major impacts. I do think this, Tim. I think what excites me and what has activated me to be so darn loud about all this stuff is that the platform has changed. This is about the internet. This is about the internet has activated a scenario where people can interact with each other. You know, that there's people watching right now. And I think, that's it. I just think that the game has changed. That's why my cover of the book says, why now is the time to cash in on your passion. Everything I talk about and believe in wasn't as possible. Just wasn't as possible 3 years ago. You know what I mean? Tim, Gary, I just think people need to be woken up to the opportunity.
Gary, talk about mobile a little bit. You touched on that. It sounds like this is an area that you're watching. What opportunities do you see that you're able to share, that you see down the pike in mobile, that people should be aware of, that media companies should be aware of, that advertisers should be aware of, and that independent producers should be thinking of?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I'm very fascinated by it. I've invested in Simple Geo and Gowalla in the last couple of weeks. So I believe in this world big time. I think that people need to recognize that I don't know how many people. You know what? Let's do a little survey. How many people on Twitter say, you know, just do hey at Gary V, answer me with this. How many of you have your last computer was a desktop purchase, not a laptop, a desktop?
Well, that was time ago for me.
Give me a yes or no in Twitter. I mean, that's why, Days. You know, because nobody buys desktops anymore. They buy laptops. And I think the next playing field is clearly going to be tablets and handheld devices. And that's why it's very important. I mean, you just have to be able to have some sort of mobile presence. And to me, if by the end of 2010, you don't have Android, BlackBerry, and iPhone apps for the business you're in, you're making a huge mistake.
What do you have? Do you have a Wine Library app?
I do, but it's been sitting in development for 9 months, and it's been a terrible job, so I scrapped it. I have a very big Corked app, Corked My Wine Social Network, CORKD.com, little linky love. We have a big-time app coming out in January, but by the end of 2010, Gary Vaynerchuk, the personal brand, Wine Library TV, Corked, Gourmet Library, Cinderella Wine, every product that I'm involved with will have apps.
Okay, so let's take that a step further. So if you do a web show on knitting, do you need to have an app for that?
Yes.
Okay, why? Because it's another point of entry? Is that why? I mean, sometimes is it that simple?
Because it's going to be the point of entry, not another. Days. It's going to be the point of entry. Now, if you can't afford it, because right now they're expensive. We're still in that world. Remember when people were paying $15,000 for an HTML website? I mean, you know, apps are still expensive. That's why I love Simple Geo, because it's easier for people to build on top of. But that price is going to come down. And when the price comes down, I do fully believe that everybody's going to need to have an app. I feel like you have to be in play, whether that's an app or a mobile version for phones, of what you do online, the same way in 1997 I was screaming to every traditional business, you need a working e-commerce website. And everybody thought I was an idiot. And I got made fun of quite a bit. Back then I was 22 and I didn't have a lot of legs to stand on. I hadn't proved anything yet. And thus, this time around, a few more people may listen. But the fact of the matter is that mobile is a necessity, not an option.
Okay, I'm going to go to a couple chat room questions right now. Somebody wants to know, what is your advice on how long it takes to build that foundation of blogging, tweeting, social networking, et cetera? That comes from Canon Blogger.
Canon Blogger, what's up? Happy holidays. It could take a long time. But you know what's so funny? So my answer is this. Hey, while. I mean, you don't build real businesses in 3 weeks. You can't build a real business. Canon Blogger, guys, people didn't build real businesses in 6 months. It took years and years and years and years and years. I mean, that's what happened. Your grandparents, they didn't build a business in 6 weeks. It took years. That being said, in this new word of mouth, viral world we live in, you're one blog post, one video away from really moving the needle. But it's a series of events. I mean, it took Wine Library a good 18 months before anybody cared. And then I had Time Magazine, and then I had Conan and Ellen and Nightline, and things started rallying. But, they feed off each other. You can get one little plug somewhere, and who knows what can happen. And so it takes time, though. It'd be impossible for me to put a time limit on it. But I would tell you that if you're even looking up for air or putting up your head to get some air or looking up to see what's going on within the first 18 months of building your business, you're not going to build a big business. I truly believe that.
Tim, I know you're a big proponent of mobile as well and sort of the app world. Do you see that that's also the direction that we're going? Anything that you want to add to that?
Well, the only thing out there that I can think that is flying off the shelves right now that isn't mobile is the 27-inch iMac. And I think that's going out for different reasons. It's a display, and it allows you to watch internet TV or hook up other computers to and use it as a monitor. But Gary's right. I mean, mobile is the future of all types of content. I mean, even when we get to this tablet model, that tablet being mobile very likely could control your entertainment, so that if you're watching it on your tablet or if you're watching it on the big screen, you're both controlling it there. And with social media changing your opinion on your way to the store, on the way to the restaurant, absolutely. When you think about all the mobile apps that are out there that allow to see what your friends are doing, and you could be notified that your friend is going to be at a certain store or a certain restaurant, you may change where you're going just because they're there. I know that, in the early days of Twitter, when we were using it at South by Southwest, it was very relevant information when somebody said, hey, free lobster and beer at this party. All of a sudden we're going to that party, and everybody shift what party they were going to. That was relevant information that we got through our mobile devices.
Well, I remember when at South by Southwest about 2 years ago, when Gary, you tweeted your wine party, and that was one of the moments when Twitter was sort of starting to take off. I want to shift to books for a few minutes, because there have been some interesting book stories recently. The biggest one that I think is important to address is potential windows for books. And there's been some talk of big publishers wanting to delay ebook releases. HarperCollins has talked about this. Hachette has talked about it. Simon & Schuster as well. Gary, what are your thoughts on, okay, there's a hardcover release, and then, much like with movies, you'd wait before the DVD comes out, and then there'd be the ebook release, and then paperback. I know that Crush It! Is available on the Kindle and obviously in hardcover right now. What way do you see it going? What do you think makes sense?
And are we saying ebooks as in Kindle and Nook?
Yes, exactly.
I don't know. I think that I did something interesting. My audio version of my book doesn't come out until January 5th. I just taped it, and that I did because I felt 6 months later I could update the content and talk about trends because I could riff off of it. And so I thought that was cool. I think a lot of people should go with that model, especially if you're writing about current events and you're writing, nonfiction. So I think that's kind of interesting. As far as the ebook thing, I think books as we know them today are going to be sold as souvenirs and as like interesting little additions eventually. It's just going to be the way it is. Things change. We used to have records. Then we had, 8-track. Then we had, tapes. Then we had, DVD, CDs and DVDs. Things change. Why can't paper change? It can. And oh, by the way, it will. And I'm not emotional about it one way or the other. I think most of the people that are making decisions about whether to do this or not, are just trying to hold off the inevitable to make sure that they cash in personally on whatever the hell they care about. Anybody who's naive enough to not think that paper books are going to diminish in popularity and demand are completely out of their mind.
I wonder if it's risky, though. I think the thing that's worth addressing, is it risky for publishers to say they're going to hold back? They've been putting books, I mean, not every book is available on the Kindle or the Nook right now. We know that. But for publishers that have been doing that with their major hardcover releases, where they've been putting them out at the same time, like The Lost Symbol, you know, Dan Brown's book came out, obviously, hardcover and in Kindle at the same time. Now there's some talk, and I'm not saying it's going to be Dan Brown in particular, that there would be a window, because publishers are concerned that they would lose, you know, the biggest, obviously, price point, which is a hardcover book. I think the thing that is giving some people concern is when media companies tend to get involved, when new models come along like that and they try to go back to the old model, that's just a recipe for disaster. And I wonder if sort of trying to arbitrarily insert these new windows what is the word I'm looking for? It's like putting a finger in the dike.
Cannibalize?
No, not cannibalize.
No, I think it's holding off the inevitable.
Yeah, exactly.
Daisy, right? It's just a holding mechanism. It's like being half pregnant. It's bullcrap.
All right. So release windows should be at the same time.
Or not. Or let them come out 6 months later and call it the remix. Do what the music industry comes. Have a hit and then be like, remix, and add three lines in the ebook version and go there. Here's the funny part. There is no right answer. The right answer is the marketing of how you do it and what converts, not what's going to work or what's not. Everybody should try as many different versions as possible. If I was HarperCollins or any of these other publishers, I would mix it up. I would take the six most successful books that we know are going to be successful, a Palin, a Dan Brown, and do different things with them and figure it out. That's the only way you're going to learn.
What do you guys think about Vivo? This is sort of the heralded Hulu for the music industry. It's backed by Universal Music Group, Sony DMG. I mean, it's supposed to it's designed to kind of be like a competitor to having all the music videos up on YouTube. Have you guys played around with it at all? What is the point of it? Is it too little, too late? Is it just right?
Tim?
I don't know anyone using it yet. I haven't touched it. I've looked at it, but I haven't played with it. And I think it's one of those things, you know, these are big companies. They're going to put some dollars behind it. It's going to get out there, but it's going to take a while for that to happen. I mean, there needs to be some tipping point. You know, it's kind of like texting. You know, we had texting available to us. It was very popular in Europe, but it wasn't until, you know, Ryan Seacrest said, hey, you guys can text in your vote, that all of a sudden America started texting on a regular basis. So I think we need something like that to jumpstart this and get it going. But, you know, you take a look at the other side of the fence, there are a lot of great music outlets out there, whether it's iTunes or Pandora. Why do I need something else?
It sounds like it's one of those things where we're not really hearing people buzzing about it yet. I mean, Gary, is that fair to say? Is this something, whether you've checked it out or not, is sort of irrelevant right now? Are you even hearing people talking about it? I'm curious.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Then that is all
I'm joking,
we need
I'm joking.
To know.
I'm joking. I do know what you're talking about, but boy, oh boy, nobody's talking about it at all. Does that mean it's a little too late? No, I mean, let's go read the first 50 articles about Hulu. Everybody said it was going to be a disaster. Everybody.
Right.
Tim, you remember that, right?
I said it. I was completely wrong.
They didn't even have a name for it back then.
It was
the YouTube killer, and nobody knew what it was.
That's right. It just sounded awful. And as much as this sounds awful, and this is out, so it's a little bit different than that scenario. But the fact of the matter is this. They don't have a lot of buzz right now. That's a problem. The music industry, more than any other industry, did a really bad job in hurting their brands. We hate the music industry. That's what we've all kind of, you know, and not us, because we're all, you know, well, not you, Daisy, but Tim and I are older chaps. But the younger generation, you talk to anybody 25 and under, they, you know, the music industry is right there with like poison gas. I mean, their brand equity with society is so ruined. And that's what happens when you sue your friggin' users, you idiots.
There you go. I think that is an apt description of how people view them. And I'm flattered that you think you're older than me. Let's have people believe that. That would be wonderful. Why are you doing a book tour? What's the value of that? I mean, you are a unique entity. You can command an audience. But do you feel that the book tour in and of itself is helping you sell books, or is it helping you sell other aspects of VaynerMedia?
It's helping me meet people and thanking them for supporting what I do. It's giving me real relationships, which do I think convert into business down the line? Absolutely. Will it? Maybe, maybe not. Does it make me happy and feel like I'm holding up my end of the bargain as somebody of point of interest for a small demo? Absolutely. And so, Daze, this is more about life than it is about commerce. I want to meet people. I know, listen, you know, Daze, you and Tim are kind of, you know, interesting. You'd be surprised to hear this, both of you. I'm very hermit-like when, you know, I work. I mean, there's not a lot of people have not met me, you know, more than once, and both of you have. I mean, and I think because, and Daisy, especially you, you've spent even more time with me. I mean, I know for fact, and I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's better, worse, and different, but I know for fact that you know me better than most people. And at least for myself, I feel like that's the position I want to put myself in, because I know my parents raised a good guy, and I know I'm not full of crap, and I try hard. I'm not perfect, but I'm always going to try. And I think that's a good place for me to be. And so the more I can actually meet people, and the more they can see I'm not full of crap, and I'm not a cartoon character of myself, and I think is very valuable for me in general.
How would you feel if one person came to your reading?
Fine. I would spend the whole time with them. I'd feel the initial competitive, like, ooh, right? Yeah. But I'm so obnoxiously confident. You know, I don't want to think of it as ego, because that's such an ugly word, but I'd be lying if I said that I felt that if one person shows up at my book signing tonight, that I would be devastated and couldn't recover. I would have the best time with that person. I'd feel lucky that, you know, I would almost feel like it was like meant to be, and I got to spend all this time with this person, and I would just move on. I'm pretty ironclad when it comes to that part of me.
Well, and you never know, you know, what interaction is that, whether it's an interaction that occurs in real life like that at a book tour event, or you running into somebody, or wherever it is. But it kind of goes back to what you were saying at the beginning, that it's like the good will rise up and the bad will be exposed, and you know, everything is just more out there, everything is more public these days. And I think that on the similar side of that is that it's like you just never know what interaction is going to result in something. And wouldn't it be great if that interaction tonight, if there is one person, resulted in 100 sales of your books? But wouldn't it also be great if you inspire somebody to go out and pursue their dreams? I mean, that's kind of what you're saying as well. And that's why people like you, because because that's part of it too. It's like the happiness that you project is real.
I promise you
that. Happy show today.
I'm hoping that somebody becomes the biggest brand of all time and they red crush it because of two things. One, you know, that's, do you know what kind of feeling that is? I mean, I just got an email from somebody who got a $100,000 a year PR job, strictly credits Crush It, which is wrong, but I'll take it. And I couldn't stop. I smiled for like 45 minutes. It was just like, you know, it's like when you're doing nice things for other people, it's always better. You know, I hate getting presents. That's my statement. That is my statement. You know, I've since I was 14 years old, did not want birthday presents. It's just how I'm wired. And thus, those kind of characters in life are popular. It's why people like me, because I truly care about other people. The end.
Karma. Hey, Tim,
Karma.
We're going to wrap up in just a few minutes because we've got a hard stop here. But I don't want to hog the whole time asking Gary questions. Are there things that you want to weigh in, some questions you want to toss at him, things you want to chat with him about,
sure,
before we let him go?
You know, Gary, I'm curious, what do you know, first of all, there's rumors going around that you're going to buy the Atlanta Braves. Is that true?
Yes, I'm going to then win 4 World Series, flip them, and buy the Jets.
Yeah, but what I'm really curious about, what have you learned on the book tour and doing the book? Is there any insight that you could share to people like Daisy who are about to hit that trail? And tell us what are some tips that you've learned? You know, are you drinking more water? Are you getting exercise? What are you doing?
No, I gained weight. I'm a mess. But what I think is interesting about that, Tim, and that's a great question. I would tell you this, Daisy, one thing that I think way too many people are scared of doing is selling. I think people are so scared of that in social media. They don't want to be too selly, too spammy. They think selling equals spam. I think that is a major mistake.
Why?
Because really, well, because you've got to sell. I mean, that's what you do when you if you're writing a book, you've got to sell. And I wasn't thrilled on how much I talked about Crush It for 3 months, but there was no option. I had to. And so, Tim, to me, I think a lot of people make the mistake of not recognizing that if they're an author, they're a salesperson for that book. And I also think that people need to work harder. I mean, I feel bad for all the people that are watching right now and that are going to be on Twitter and saying great interview or bad interview. I hate the fact that I repeat the same stuff over and over, like hard work, but I believe in it and I don't want to just make up stuff. The reason Crush It was a New York Times bestseller, Wall Street Journal bestseller, Business Week bestseller was because I worked so outrageously hard that 99.9% of the authors out there of all time did not work as hard as I did for this book. I know it's true.
And, you know, I have to say, I think that is there are obviously a lot of people who are lucky, who luck into things, who get, you know, lucky the first time. But I just have to second and third what you said, because I didn't sell my first novel. I didn't sell my second novel. I didn't sell my third novel. I didn't sell the nonfiction proposal that I wrote, of which Gary was my sample chapter of how he became successful online. I wrote a nonfiction proposal called Instant Fame about people who became famous online through online video. Yep. It was fantastic. I mean, I wrote a brilliant chapter with him as the lead and it didn't sell. I just kept writing. I kept putting my butt in the chair. I'm telling you, I keep saying that. It's butt in the chair. That's what you have to do. And you have to keep doing the work. And that's what, you know, finally, and I kept writing. And I think, Gary, what you're saying is, you know, never underestimate at all the value of persistence, because at the end of the day, you know, there are a lot of people who have talent, or a fair enough amount of people who have talent, you know, but if you want to be truly successful, what can differentiate you and what you can control, one of the very few things that you can control is persistence and the amount of work and effort that you put into something.
And here's my thing, Days and Tim, if you love it, you've won. I hate the question of, well, how do I figure out? Sorry, I just saw the Italian prime minister get his face beat in with a statue on TV. It just freaked me out. Anyway, you know, what if, how am I supposed to figure out if it's going to work? If I'm not wasting 18 months and it's never going to go anywhere? I truly believe all you have to do is love it and you've won. It's not just about money, people. It's not just about money.
Okay, I'm going to ask you one more money question, then I'm going to let you go. I spoke with one of our listeners is Lon Seidman. He was on our show a couple weeks ago, and he said that he'd met you at a book signing recently. Obviously, big fan of yours. And he said the two of you had a conversation about direct monetization of videos and advertising. And we don't have to, you know, talk about specific companies if you don't want. But I want you to give a framework or best practices, if you will, for when you would need to turn down ads, which sounds antithetical to so many independent producers where we're, you know, trying to make a living or whatever it is. But what advice would you give somebody where, you know, you're going to need to say no to a client, potential client, to a money-making opportunity, to an advertiser? How do you tell what those cases are?
It's tough for me to answer that, Dave, because I do it completely on intuition, right? I don't think they're always black and white. There's a lot of people that have signed a lot of deals that they thought were going to be great and then they ended up being awful. To me, I just want people to recognize that they, when they're in business, they need to treat themselves like, you know, a piece of gold. Like you can't go slutting around town. You know, you the longer you can hold out, you know, it's the whole like marriage instead of, you know, milk and cow, all those analogies that moms tell girls, you know, same thing in business. I mean, the longer you can hold out to monetizing, the more value you have. It's supply and demand. And so I think that it's very difficult for me to answer, but you always want to associate yourself with good brands. Anybody who you take an ad from, you've now become associated with them. Period. End of story. Anybody you do an interview with, anybody you give a quote to, you know, I think people throw around their name too much. And I think they need to keep it close to the vest and make the proper decisions. I would associate myself with brands that bring something to the table, ones that elevate your status, and ones that you think are also financially suitable.
As Colleen says, a brand is worth more than a single ad. So same thing, clients, all of the thing. Okay, so we are going to wrap things up. Gary, where would you like people to find you online?
Anybody listening right now, I'd love to, for them to stop by and say hello on facebook.com/Gary, G-A-R-Y. I'm spending more time there. It's easy for me to manage stuff in there. And I like the friendships I'm making in Facebook lately. I'm spending a little more time. I like the conversations that I can do within posts on my wall. So little friend feed-ish in that way, friend feed. Facebook.com/Gary. If you want to say what's up, hello, I appreciate it. And Dave, thanks so much. Tim, thanks so much. I'm sorry I'm running off, but I noticed I'm 3 minutes late for a call.
Go to your call. Take care, Gary. And Tim, where do you want people to find you?
You can find me at onetimstreet.com.
And sorry we didn't get to hear from you much, but, you know,
fine.
Thank you for
good.
Showing
Gary
up as
great.
Always.
It's good.
And you can find me at daisywhitney.com. I'm blogging there regularly, daisywhitney.com/blog. Just kind of, you know, fun stuff about writing and all of that. As always, you can watch the new Media Minute there and in many other places. And this was a fun show. Wow. I'm so glad we had Gary on. I mean, don't you just feel energized after hearing from him? I got to tell you, you know, I really do. I think if you haven't read his book, you're doing yourself a disservice. If you have any sort of business, you know, whether you're an author, whether you're an independent producer, whether you are an executive at a brand, wherever you work, I think there's truly something to take away. I'm sure Tim would back me up on that, right?
It's like a car ride home from the candy store.
So anyway, thank you all for tuning in. And this mess you've been listening to is This Week in Media. We are over and out.